she said. And then she attacked. Gareth.
Thank Orion, that man is on our side, Gareth thought, watching through the leaves as Taryn Sheary felled foe after foe. Gwen was unconscious from loss of blood, but Gareth had managed to stem the flow with torn and balled-up portions of his shirt. At one point, one of the barbarians had stumbled through the branches. Gareth had managed to kill him. He was fairly certain it was male, though it was hard to tell, but only after being badly blooded and bruised in the process. The second attack had come from one of the larger barbarians, a female, and he might have been killed if his legionnaires hadn't arrived in the nick of time, rushing through the forest and throwing themselves against the horde with reckless abandon. An Orion archer's arrow had pierced the large female ear to ear.
"Thank you," Gareth had breathed,
but the woman had only nodded and rushed off to find another target. The tide had shifted momentarily, before the horde regained their advantage, pushing them back once more. Now, Gareth was torn. He could stay with Gwen and fight those barbarians that came to him, or rush back into battle. But what if she dies? I need to find a healer. Rhone, he thought, shoving branches aside until the way was clear. Something large leapt at him from the side, and Gareth parried a strike from a massive club with a large nail in it. The blow was heavy enough to rattle his hands and send shockwaves up his arms. He spun back the other way, furious, opening the throat of his attacker.
"Rhone!"
he shouted, though he didn't know whether the peacemaker was within shouting distance, or even still alive. Someone stepped forward, a human man wearing tattered clothing, his beard thick and unkempt, not unlike his hair. "I know this man," Gareth thought, though it took him a moment to place him. "Ennis?" he said. This was the man who'd betrayed his own country to rescue him, all in the hopes of establishing a peace between the East and the West, something that at the time had seemed impossible. Ennis shook his head, his thick mane shifting from side to side. His mouth opened to reveal what was left of his tongue, a wriggling worm.
"I am no one," he gurgled.
Gareth was shocked at the change in the man. When he'd left Fane's, the man was weathered from the time he spent imprisoned in one of the Phoenician war cities, but he was still Ennis. But now...
"Ennis, we can still make peace. We are still fighting. There is still hope."
All around him, the battle raged, barbarians killing humans and Orions in droves, occasionally losing one of their own.
"We are losing," Gareth thought. "Badly."
His own mind betrayed the words he spoke to Ennis.
"I'm sorry,"
Ennis said. "I'm sorry."
"What?"
Before the question was fully out of Gareth's mouth, the man had quick-stepped forward, the grace of his movements a contradiction to his weary appearance. He swung a heavy two-handed sword at Gareth's chest. Gareth managed to come to his senses and leap back, taking the blow on the broadside of his blade, deflecting the strike downward. Ennis spun, rotating his sword around his body, trying to sweep in from Gareth's left side. For most of Gareth's life, he'd been known as the shield, but it wasn't the shield he'd learned to use. No, he'd been trained in the sword. And now he fell naturally into combat with the seasoned soldier, parrying strike after strike. High, low, stabbing, slashing, it mattered not. Several times he saw openings in Ennis's defences, but passed them up, hoping the man would tire himself out. Gareth's unwillingness to fight him seemed only to infuriate him.
"Hit me!"
he screamed, spit flecking his beard.
"Stab me! Fight, damn you! Fight!"
His slashes grew faster and wilder, every stroke meant to be a killing stroke. One almost took off his head, but Gareth ducked at the last second, finally attacking in frustration, slashing Ennis at the knees. The man fell back, his sword flying from his grip. Instinct took over, and Gareth pressed forward, thrusting the tip of his sword beneath Ennis's chin. He stopped, breathing heavily. Nestled amongst Ennis's beard, his blade had broken the skin, a trickle of blood meandering out from the dark hair.
"Do it,"
Ennis said, and Gareth could see the desperation in the man's eyes.
"Peace! Kill me! Set me free!"
"Set me free." Gareth's translation of the last three words broke his heart.
It was a request from a friend, but Gareth knew sometimes a friend was better served through rejection than blind obedience. Roan had taught him that several times over, though it had taken a while for the lesson to get through his thick skull. Gareth struck him, not with his sword, which he pulled back, but with the back of his opposite hand, a firm slap across the face. "Get up," Gareth said, extending a hand. "You're going to help us win the day." Ennis's eyes pooled with tears, and he bit his lip hard enough to draw blood. But then he grabbed Gareth's hand. Shay. It was time to end this. They'd tried and failed. The lives of the Fatemarked were important, yes, but not at the cost of everyone else. If they had the ability to kill the leader of the Horde, they had to take it before it was too late. Her greatest regret was that Grey's daughter would be caught in the crossfire. "I'm sorry," Shay thought, wishing she had Lisbeth's power, so she could cross the distance between she and her brother to speak directly into his mind. "Please forgive me for everything." "It's time," Eric said, and she could see the sadness in his eyes, mirroring her own. The sadness wasn't for what they were about to do, but for her. He loved her as a brother might love a sister, and she loved him in return. She nodded, grasping his hand without looking, her fingers threading through his in that way that had been so familiar and easy from the moment she'd met him. She closed her eyes. "Gods, forgive us," she thought, their hands beginning to glow. Roan. Walking side by side with Bane, Roan felt tied to the boy like he'd never felt connected to anyone in his life. His fate mark burned hot in his chest, and he could see the orange glow of Bane's as well. Twice barbarians had tried to assault them, but each time Bane had stepped forward and ended them, his death mark flaring. Sometimes there are those who must die in order for there to be peace. Those words he'd learned so long ago rang truer than he could ever imagine. "Two more rulers must die," he thought sadly. It was the only way to end this. They strode past the hottest part of the battle to where a smaller skirmish had broken out, forming a circle. Around the edges, Eastern legionnaires and Northern soldiers and Terran slaves and Phoenicians fought barbarians. Roan's eyes, however, were drawn to the centre, where a large man stood, weaponless, his arms hanging loosely at each side. He wore a furred leather vest, his arms bare. His thick trousers reached his boots, but were pulled tight by manacles of iron and yew. His chest burned with a marking of blood. "The pain mark," Roan thought. "The reason for all of this. The Oracle's grand plan." "It worked!" Roan wanted to scream. "Are you satisfied now? We are united. We are fighting and dying for the peace you promised." Several were gathered in the circle with the Horde leader, mist roiling around them. Roan's eyes widened as he recognized them. Ennis Loren, Gareth Ironclad. Roan's heart skipped a beat. Northerners, the armored knight, his morning star arcing overhead. An Isgerrick, wielding a similar weapon. A squat, broad-shouldered woman. Roan spotted someone else apart from the fray. Well, two someones, holding hands, their heads bowed as if in prayer, their eyes closed. "No," he thought, starting toward them. His chest clenched, and he felt a great ache in his heart, as if a hand was squeezing him on the inside. He dropped to one knee with a groan, his eyes locking with Bane's. The boy had fallen too and was clutching his chest.
"What is happening?"
Bane breathed, fear in his dark eyes.
"The half-marked," Roan grunted. "They're going to end it."
Roan's life mark flared, trying to thwart the assault.
"Shay! Eric!"
he shouted. But if they heard him, they gave no indication. He tried to push to his feet, but immediately fell back, sapped of strength.
"Lisbeth," he tried, "are you there?" "It hurts," she answered. "The half-marked." "I know. Can you speak to them?" "They are blocking me. Somehow. This power is great. The Oracles feel safe. It's over."
Tears bit at Roan's eyes. They were tears of joy for those who would live.
Rhea and Grey and Anise and Gareth and Ennis and Falcon and so many others. But Gwendolyn. But Bane. But Shay and Eric and Lisbeth and... Nora. His niece had only just been born, and now she was going to die. She bore the peace mark. That should count for something more than turning the night to day and chasing away shadows. There had to be a greater purpose.
Lisbeth? Goodbye, Rune. May I see you in the stars?
No, Rune said. Please. Open a connection between Nora and the Half-Marked.
Rune, she's only an infant.
No, Rune said, his inner voice growing weak. She's hope and peace and the next generation and everything that's important in this life. Just try. Please, try.
I will try,
Lisbeth said. The child spoke. Nora. The world was a place of such beauty that Nora could barely look away. The colours, the sounds, the people. Her mother's face, her father's eyes. Now there was pain, a clenching in her chest. She wailed, scared. Her mother tried to comfort her, but she could not.
What is happening?
Her mother said.
The Half-Marked,
the kindly woman in the blue dress said.
Do something. I'm trying.
Nora could hear the kindly woman's voice in her head, but it was distant and she couldn't make out the words. But there was another, the one from the beginning, the woman who spoke to her inside, teaching her.
Speak, my daughter,
she said now.
Speak and they will listen. I have no voice,
Nora thought.
I am too new. Not from your mouth, from your heart. Oh. Oh.
She understood. Somehow, she understood.
I am the Peace-Marked,
she said. And she could feel the recognition in many others. Bright collections of light and fire. She could feel the recognition in one other, too, his light darker, filled with pain and turmoil.
You have had your time, but now it is mine. A coin has been flipped, and it need not land on one side, life or death. There is another option, a world of sadness and joy, a world of loss and hope, a world that shares the good with the evil, the war with the peace, a place where hope flowers grow in the north, and gods share the adoration in the south, where the sun rises and falls, and the moons and stars paint pictures in the night sky. This is the world I was born into, but it doesn't exist without us, and it doesn't come for free. There is always a cost. I am not the cost.
The words came to her from another place, and she knew it was the woman speaking to them all, her fate-marked brothers and sisters. It was the woman's last words before she left this world forever. The clenching in her chest eased, and then ceased altogether. And she smiled. Nora smiled. Her peace mark began to glow even brighter. 103. The Western Kingdom, Felix. Helmuth Gerrick.
Fools,
Helmuth thought, fighting back to his feet. Some greater power filled with pain, a power he could appreciate, had held his heart in its grasp, only to release him. Now they would all suffer for that mistake. The first to attack him was the massive knight wearing the spiked armour. He had the look of a northerner, which brought great pleasure to Helmuth. The blow would have ended him, but it never fell. Instead, his mist fell upon the surprised knight, and he missed, his weapon's chain wrapping around his own leg. The next to come was his niece, Anise, and he was impressed by her fearlessness as she swung her small, spiked ball. He ducked under the attack and grabbed her by the throat, sending a jolt of pain through her body, thrusting her back just in time to turn and take a slash in the arm instead of the throat from the man he'd thought he'd broken.
Blood welled up from the long rend in his skin, flowing down his arm and pooling in his palm. Helmuth's hand shot out and clamped on Ennis Lorenz's wrist. The man kept his feet, managing to switch the sword to his other hand.
"What the hell?"
Helmuth thought. He glanced at his chest, though he didn't need to. His pain mark continued to flare, sending power through to any he touched. This man, however, was unaffected.
"He feels no pain," he realized. "Not any more."
The realization came just in time for him to twist Ennis's wrist and break away, dodging a stab that would have ended him. It was too close a call. He needed to slip away behind his army and regroup. The situation in its current condition was spiraling out of control. He charged for the edge of the circle, sending tendrils of mist out before him to shove his horde aside and open a gap through the throng. Several humans, however, stepped in his path, shoving him back into the circle. He could see the jolt of pain that shot through their bodies, but they merely grimaced and held their positions. He sensed the next attack from behind and dropped to the ground, using his attacker's momentum to send him over his head. Ennis landed awkwardly on his back and neck, his eyes rolling back. Helmuth swiftly clambered to his feet and struck the next attacker, a man clad in the armor of the East. His sword was well-practiced and efficient, hemming him in with lithe, smooth strokes. But this man was not immune to his power, as Ennis had been. Helmuth waited for an opening and then grabbed him, shooting pain through his very bones. The man's hand opened, and he fell. Helmuth loomed over him, drawing his own blade. Roan. Roan's head was spinning from hearing the Western Oracle's words spoken through his own niece directly into his head. His chest, however, no longer ached, and the half-marked had stopped the flow of their power. "Good," he thought. "This is good." "Bane," he said, "are you ready?" Shadows seemed to coalesce around the boy's face and head, broken only by the fire burning on his scalp.
"Let's kill this bastard," Bane said.
Together they strode through the throng, a narrow passage opened by their allies, who fought valiantly on either side. They spilled into the circle, and Roan immediately saw what was about to happen, the impending death of the ninth ruler.
"No!"
he shouted, already knowing it was too late to save Gareth, the blade flashing down toward his head. Clank! Bane appeared from thin air, blocking the thrust from the Horde leader, shoving him back with a force so powerful the large man almost lost his footing.
"You,"
Helmuth said.
"Aye, and I brought friends this time."
Bane gestured back toward Roan, who'd been joined by the half-mark.
"It is no matter," Helmuth said. "One nor many. You are too weak, as I once was. But this is a new day, a day on which the world will burn."
He shot forward, sending fog all around Bane, who screamed, clutching at his skull. And then he struck, a flurry of blows that Bane barely managed to deflect with his blades, all the while screaming and grasping at his head. Atop his bald dome, his death mark was fading. "Two sides of the same coin," Roan thought, focusing. He sent a stream of light from his chest toward Bane, not to heal him, but to stoke the fires of Bane's marking. Sparks flew from his scalp as his mark burst back to life. The mist recoiled like a snake before a held torch, and Bane managed to regain his footing, slashing out at the Horde leader, who danced back.
"Should we strengthen Bane?"
Shay asked, having arrived beside him, her brow furrowed. Roan considered it. Killing Helmuth could be the difference between victory and defeat, but he knew the half-marked could only use their power once more on this day. And in his heart, he felt there was a greater purpose. "Not yet," he said. In the center of the circle, Gareth had rolled away, shoved out of harm's reach by Bane. The pain-marked was calling his horde to him, but any barbarians who tried to break free were fought off by valiant defenders. He spotted Sonica and Falcon and a knight with sword strokes crafted to perfection. Ennis Loren was on his feet and fighting, too. Hailing from the north was a massive knight and Queen Anis Garrick, as well as a woman who was a smaller version of her. All fighting. All resisting. Roan knew he couldn't kill, not even these barbarians, but he was fighting too, supporting Bane in what he was born to do. Bane's dagger moved so quickly it might have been a shard of silver light through a cracked doorway. His body vanished and reappeared just as rapidly. Helmuth Garrick bellowed as he was slashed on the arm, the chest, the back. Again and again his mist tried to wrap around the death-marked boy, but Roan was with him, his light chasing away the fog of pain and terror. Bane appeared at Helmuth's front and stabbed him in the gut. Helmuth kicked at him, connecting solidly, throwing him back. The Horde leader followed through, bleeding from many cuts, diving atop Bane and driving a blade toward his throat. Roan was about to rush forward, already preparing to send his healing power toward Bane, when everything stopped. Roan blinked, trying to understand. Not a soul moved or breathed. Their positioning frozen in time like some artist's depiction of a great battle. After the cacophony of battle, the perfect silence was a shock, almost as if Roan had lost his hearing. Only the sound of his own ragged breathing told him he had not. Overhead, the sky was filled with a blinding light, brighter than the noonday sun, brighter than Roan's own life mark. He looked back toward its origin, which seemed to come from the south, and he understood. Nora Loren, daughter of his own sister, Rhea Loren, the peace-marked. The light came from her. Inexplicably. Impossibly. It was an infant who had saved Bane's life, who had possibly saved them all. What now? He wondered. But not for long, because he knew. She hadn't frozen him, which meant he had a role to play. He strode forward with confidence, dragging Bane by his heels until he was well clear of Helmuth's death blow. He hoped it would be enough to turn the battle back in Bane's favor. Roan stepped back, waiting, waiting. Everything rushed back to life in an instant, the sounds of battle assaulting Roan's ears. Helmuth's blade thunked into the ground, his eyes widening when he found his foe gone, having disappeared before his very eyes. Helmuth pushed to his feet and spun, seeking his enemy. Bane appeared directly in front of him, slashing his wrist, causing the large man to drop his weapon. Helmuth gawked at the blood pumping from his skin, but Bane wasn't satisfied, slashing the other wrist and then jamming his knife into his chest up to the hilt. He held it there, twisting it slightly as Helmuth gasped, blood bubbling from his lips. "Die," Bane said, wrenching the dagger from his opponent's chest and slashing it across his throat. He turned away as the man fell. Gareth. The turn of events seemed to happen so fast, Gareth had blinked, and it was over. Now, the barbarians stopped fighting, standing dumbly, staring in the direction of their fallen leader. Several of them died easily as the humans continued fighting. But then, with grunts and snarls and snapping of jaws, the barbarians began once more to fight. Except this time it wasn't only the humans and Orians they fought. No, now they fought each other, too. "Away!" Gareth shouted, realizing what was happening, that the spell had been broken. Heads turned his way, and understanding dawned across his allies. They retreated, watching the barbarians rip each other apart until few remained, and those who did had grievous injuries. Taryn Sheary stepped forward. "My turn," he said, his voice a growl as he stalked toward the few enemies. Gareth turned away, not wanting or needing to watch, his focus entirely on him. Roan stood beside Bane, and something about their closeness felt right, inevitable. But Gareth wasn't about to let an ancient prophecy get in the way of his grand reunion. He rushed into Roan's arms, drawing him close, slapping his back and breathing in his scent. Roan pulled back, his eyes glittering in that amused way that had captured Gareth's attention from the moment he met him on that fateful day, all those months ago. "Miss me?" Roan said. "You? Not really. I'm here for Bane." Roan laughed. "So am I. We all are, in fact. He's our hero today." Gareth glanced at the shadowy boy, who shifted uncomfortably under their scrutiny. Still, he could tell he was pleased by the compliment. "Where's Gwen?" Caught up in the battle and the unexpected turn of events and their remarkable victory, Gareth had forgotten. How had he forgotten? "Hurry," he said now, grabbing Roan by the edge of his shirt. Come with me.
104. The Western Kingdom, Felix. Gwendolyn Storm. The sounds of the battle had faded into the background. Gwen could hear the beating of her heart, though that was growing slower and weaker, and the rush of blood through her head, though that seemed to be lessening too. She cracked her eyelids, but the dark had given way to a bright day, and she jammed them shut again, seeing a whirl of spots. She remembered fighting the leader of the Horde. She was winning, she thought. And then nothing but pain, as darkness closed in.
I am dying, she thought,
the realization taking her by surprise. She'd known Aurians who had died, the potential of their long lives snipped away like a length of rope chopped at the wrong end. Her father, for one. When he'd died in battle, he'd had 50 good years left in him at the least. War meant death, and Gwen was no stranger to it. And yet, even though she'd faced many dangerous situations in her short 9 decades of life, she'd never been close to her final act. She thought of 3 people in those final moments. First, Ciri.
My soul?
She offered to the sky. There was no response, and she could feel a dark, empty space that had once been filled by the red dragon turned black. She had failed, Raven. She had failed her soul. Second, Gareth Ironclad. Gwen had never expected the friendship they now had. Once, she'd thought of him only as an arrogant princeling, but now knew a man with a heart of gold, a man who could make her laugh at almost any time of day or in any situation, though most of the time she pretended not to be amused.
I should have laughed with him more, she thought now.
The spots behind her eyelids seemed to be drifting aimlessly now, and she sensed the approach of the end.
"Will the great forest of Orion be lush and thick this time of year?" she wondered. Was it always lush and thick? Would those she'd loved and lost be waiting there for her? Her father, her mother, Alistair, her warrior poet. She could see their faces now, as clearly as if they stood beside her.
She'd wanted to be with them for so long, but now that she had the opportunity, she wanted to see another more. Third, Roan Loren. He'd changed her in ways she'd never dreamed possible, stripping her of the desire for vengeance, the need to hate, the yearning for war. He'd cracked the armor encasing her heart and allowed her to love again. Him, Raven Sands, Ciri. He'd shown her what it meant to be human, imperfect, but still striving, always striving.
Gwendolyn.
The voice might have been spoken by the wind, as soft and soothing and heartfelt as it was. She'd bruised others who had dared use her full first name. Roan was the only one, besides Alistair and her father. She opened her eyes, drinking him in. Through his white linen shirt, his life mark glowed.
Hello,
she said, her voice cracking slightly on the end.
Oh, Gwendolyn,
he said, and the 2 words were filled with so much, the past, present, and future, boiled down to a single drop of time. She licked her dry, cracked lips, trying to moisten them so she could speak, say everything she longed to say to this man who'd claimed her heart in the thickest part of the tangle.
I shall miss you, she said.
Over Roan's shoulder, she saw Gareth peering through tree branches. He nodded to her thoughtfully and then backed away.
You don't have to, Roan said. I'm going to save you.
He placed his hands on her abdomen, fingers probing delicately between the breach in her armor.
Roan,
she said, his name sounding so familiar to her ears. The spots were gathering around his head, joined together by a halo of light. If she lived, he would have to choose between she and Gareth. If he chose Gareth, she would be broken-hearted. And if he chose her, she didn't want to hurt her friend. And if Ciri's soul was lost to her...
I don't know if I want to be saved, she admitted.
She recognized the troubled look that crossed Roan's face, and she loved him even more for it. It was his expression of righteous indignation,
the sign that he refused to accept that which others accepted without thought, and that he wouldn't sleep until he changed things. "A world without you is no world at all," he said, and she felt a corner of the dark void of her soul brighten just a little. She didn't know if what he said was true, but it had to be enough. He'd given her a reason to live, other than vengeance, and he was doing so again now. It was like she'd been sleepwalking through life for decades, only to finally awaken from her slumber and find herself wrapped in the arms of one who loved her all along. She nodded, the world growing dim. "There is one ruler left to die for the prophecy to be fulfilled," he said, and she could feel, more than hear, the sadness in his tone. Everything was fading on one side, while the beginnings of light glowed on the other. At first she thought it was sunrise, but then realized it was Roan's chest, the light growing brighter and brighter. And just as Gwendolyn blacked out, she understood his words. She wanted to forbid him from doing it, but she didn't. He was a hero. A hero who had never fought and killed another, but a hero just the same. Darkness swarmed over. "Roan, strengthen me," he commanded across the link between the fate-marked. He could feel Lisbeth's tears on her cheeks, could sense Dietrich's fingers brushing them away.
"Goodbye," they said, as one.
Bane was there too, but he cloaked himself in shadow. The only part visible was his death mark, a fiery circle, only one segment yet to be filled with blood.
"What am I without you?" he asked, his voice a whisper.
"A hero," Roan said. "More than I ever gave you credit for. And for that I'm sorry. Do not waste this life. Live it for us both."
Bane hesitated for only a moment before saying,
"I will."
The half-marked, Shay and Eric, had waited patiently, but now they spoke.
"Are you ready?"
"Gareth?" Roan said aloud, sensing the King of the East was still within earshot.
"I'm here. Will you hold me?"
"Of course." The rustle of trampled undergrowth crackled, and then warmth enveloped him.
"I'm ready," he said.
Gareth's cheeks were touching his now, wet and warm. He wasn't certain who was crying, perhaps both of them, but it felt right. He was the 10th and final ruler, a truth he'd been running from his entire life, not because he feared death, but because he feared the responsibility that came along with it. He wasn't scared any more. The half-marked linked hands, and he felt all that was left of their power rush over him, through him, a surge that was much like throwing oil on a fire.
"Life," he thought.
White light burst from his chest, shooting into the sky, brightening it even further, cascading across the heavens like a brilliant, sparkling waterfall.
"You have done well," a voice said,
and he recognized it as the one from before, the Western Oracle, speaking through her final creation, the peace-marked girl who was his niece, Nora. And Roan smiled. "Gareth." He held him until long after it was over, Roan's head cradled between his head and chest, pressed against his neck. Gareth's tears streamed down his cheeks, dripping from his chin, soaking Roan's shirt and shimmering on his own armor. Eventually, the light faded. Eventually, Roan's heart stopped beating. But still Gareth held Roan. The moment would have to last forever. Finally, Gwen said,
"Gareth, is he?"
He nodded, unable to open his eyes for fear of breaking down.
I'm sorry."
Those two words were meant entirely for him, that much he knew. She was grieving, too, and yet she was worried about how he was feeling.
"I'm sorry, too," he said,
the words just for Gwendolyn. They could easily be enemies because of their shared love for this man, but chose another way, the way Roan would have wanted for them. They chose to be friends. And then her arms encircled him and they cried together,
until he heard a sound more magnificent than any before. It was the sound of singing. Anise. As Anise stood on the killing fields, wondering whether she was dreaming, the sky had lit up, brighter white even than it had been before. A pillar of light had emerged from the forest, spreading over everything. Tendrils of light had fallen like silver stars, touching those who lay dying or injured. And then they had arisen, one by one, blinking at the light, wonderment on their faces. She swore some of them had been dead, only to be granted life by that brilliant, beautiful light. None of the barbarians arose, the light avoiding them as if by some grand design. Zelda approached her, a thin smile creasing the edges of her lips.
"Hell of a fight, aye," she said.
Anise shook her head and hugged her aunt.
"Are you all right? I know your brother was once..."
The stocky woman pulled away sharply.
"No need to be mushy about it," she muttered. "Got any food?"
Anise laughed, glad that things hadn't changed too much. Sir Christoph Metz approached at a march and saluted, standing at attention.
"Orders, Your Highness?"
he asked. Mona Shiri stood back a step, clearly trying not to burst out laughing.
"Frozen hell," Anise said. "Kiss your woman already."
His eyes widened and he nodded, turning away.
"And don't polish your armor for at least a day," she added.
Everywhere people hugged and spoke in soft voices. Some dropped to their knees, looking to the light in the sky, which was beginning to fade. Others mourned those who had died too early in the battle to be brought back. Emotions were high, and Anise felt touched by all of them. And then they began singing. It started with a small group of northerners who joined hands. The song was an old poem written during the years of peace that had preceded the Hundred Years' War. It was titled The Mark of Peace. As they sang, others began to join them. The Easterners first, both human and Dorian. And then, as they began the second time through, the Phoenicians and Terrans as well, picking up lyrics they'd probably never heard before. The peace of dawn stretches sky to sky, once forbidden, once a lie, now a place to rest our heads, an end to war, an end to dread. Fighting long and all for this, aye, no lion to roar, no snake to hiss. Forgotten dreams now brighten the east, for we are finally touched with the mark of peace. Anise tried to join them, but her voice escaped her, her vision blinded. Each tear was filled with images of her brother and mother, one she'd known too well and the other not nearly enough. There were tears for Sejonius too, her loyal protector to the end. She cried for them. She cried for them and others she'd lost. Her people, her allies. She cried for those who'd lived, too, because they were no less worthy. She cried until a voice stopped her.
"I see you,"
the voice said. Those words caused her to choke on another sob, because they were too soon after the battle to be possible. She hadn't even looked for Terin, for she knew he'd given himself over to the monster fully. He'd done it for her and for the Four Kingdoms, even knowing he might never be able to come back from it. He shouldn't be here. He should be fighting that inner war against himself for several days. But he was. He was here. She turned and found Terin Shiri standing before her, his helmet removed, cast aside somewhere. His eyes locked on hers, and they were wide and full of the same wonder she'd felt when she watched the dead and injured rise.
"I see you,"
he said again. Anise stepped forward slowly, careful not to startle him.
"What did you expect to see?" she asked.
"After the monster, I usually see only darkness, shadowy wraiths. That's why I don't stay around. That's why I..."
He trailed away, shaking his head.
"Not this time. The light, it touched me."
"Your monster?"
"Still in me, somewhere. But its bloodlust is sated. For now."
Anise smiled and ran to him, throwing her arms around him, leaping into his arms and wrapping her legs around his hips,
Here, in public, it was decidedly unqueenlike, but frankly she didn't give a frozen hell any more. She kissed him, long and deep, and it was Taryn and not a stranger. When they finally broke apart, both breathless, he said,
"You're smiling."
"Yes."
Her smile grew.
"I am."
"How can you smile when your eyes are full of tears?"
She considered the question. There were so many reasons, but one rested at the core of it all.
"Because of you. It's always because of you."
He kissed her again, and his tears joined hers, dark lines tracing his cheeks.
"I love you, Taryn Sheery,"
she whispered against his lips.
"And I you, my queen."
Lisbeth. The knight's chipped and battered soul had never looked so radiant as it did now.
"David,"
Lisbeth said, expecting him to glide slowly toward her in that graceful way of his. Instead, Sir Dietrich raced toward her, stopping just in time to avoid a collision, picking her up and spinning her twice around before setting her lightly back on her feet. She'd never known him to be frivolous or mirthful, so the abrupt change in him drew a startled laugh from her lips.
"I want to feel your soul,"
he whispered into her ear.
"Now?"
she said.
"Yes," he said.
"Now."
When Lisbeth had arrived in this world, she had felt giddy and alive. Soon she'd learned it was a harsh place, foreign to her in many ways. But now she finally felt like she understood the purpose of all the challenges. How could one laugh if they'd never cried? How could one experience true joy if they'd never looked true loss in the eye? How could one love if they hadn't experienced the darkness of hate? Her soul melted into his and she laughed, joy and love filling both their souls. She could have stayed in that place with him forever, but on the edge of her soul she felt another familiar presence.
"I'm sorry,"
she said to Dietrich.
"It's okay," he said, understanding. "This won't be the last time."
She smiled as their souls separated. He squeezed her hand one final time and then slipped away, touching the shoulder of the newcomer before departing. The newcomer's tall, triangular face was marred by a slash on one cheek, a bright white mar on his otherwise bright soul.
"You came," she said.
She could feel the loss burning in his soul. Parts of that loss felt ancient, gathering dust over the years, while others were as fresh as the wound on his face.
"I did,"
Xur said, speaking in the common tongue.
"The Ghazi are no cowards."
"No,"
Lisbeth said.
"They are not. They are heroes."
"Your words give me honor."
She shook her head.
"Your honor is all your own. You have built it with your hands, your actions. I hope this isn't the last time your people visit these lands."
His soul bobbed, a nod.
"I do not think it will be."
Lisbeth nodded.
"Did your people suffer many losses?"
Her soul searched for the familiar souls of the Ghazi warriors, surprised to find most of them accounted for.
"Yes, but the light in the sky brought most of us back, myself included."
"I am glad."
It was too weak a word for what Lisbeth wanted to say, but her throat was too tight to say more.
"The pact has been broken by both sides," Xur said. "A new pact can be forged. Will you help us?"
"Of course. And thank you for everything."
Xur said,
"Thank you. I am finally at peace over my daughter's death."
He seemed to bite back a swell of emotion.
"She is my courage now."
Rhea.
Rhea wondered if she would ever let go of her daughter again. She knew she would have to. Grey was practically hovering over them both, trying to get his turn, but it wouldn't be today.
"Nora,"
she said.
"My beautiful Nora."
She wanted to give the world to her daughter, wanted to live every day for her.
"I will,"
she thought.
"I will."
It was the least she could do for the girl who had saved her well before she'd helped to save the Four Kingdoms.
Gray's soft lips brushed her cheek, alternating between her and their daughter. She closed her eyes and, for the first time since the night they'd created Nora, simply existed.
"Rhea,"
a voice said, forcing her eyes back open. Shay stood before her, along with Eric. Rhea knew what they'd both almost done. Again. She knew they'd held her daughter's life in their very hands, and considered ending it for the sake of the Four Kingdoms. The last time they'd tried such a thing, she'd hated them for it, had felt the familiar fires of vengeance blaze to life in her chest. She'd barely resisted the pull then. But this was different now. Their actions repeated. The old Rhea would have confronted the threat head-on, would have raged and punished and felt good about it. But that Rhea was gone, and she understood the corner they'd been backed into. And it wasn't just Nora's life they had been willing to sacrifice, but their own, too.
For the greater good.
And that made them heroes.
Shay, Eric, come here. Kiss my daughter's forehead. Tickle her. Listen to her laugh. It will change you forever. Just as it changed me, she thought,
spotting another familiar figure approaching. In the background was a pirate ship, its sails flapping in the breeze. On any other day, that might have been strange. The one approaching was Kyla, a woman who might still be a challenger for Gray's heart. Rhea saw Gray stiffen, his eyes flicking to hers. She didn't feel jealous, however, not any more. If this woman had helped Gray become the man he was now, then she was thankful for her. And Gray's heart was his own to give, and he'd already chosen her and Nora.
"Go to her," she said. "Make your peace."
Gray. Gray was surprised by Rhea's acquiescence. Yes, she'd changed in many ways during their time apart, but she was still full of the fire that made her who she was, the love of his life. He'd thought she was more likely to dig Kyla's eyeballs out and make her eat them than suggest he go make his peace with her. He stepped forward obediently, else it'd be his eyeballs dug out. Kyla stopped just before him. She was as beautiful as ever, her dark eyes like unlit coals, her smooth brown skin marred by splashes of blood. She looked every bit the warrior pirate she'd become as they journeyed to Pirate's Peril and back.
"Thank you," Gray said. "You saved us."
Kyla nodded, her eyes wandering to the massive ship furrowed into the dirt.
"Lisbeth can move it back to the sea for you once she recovers her strength," Gray said.
Kyla nodded again, her eyes distant.
"Where will you go?"
Gray knew it wasn't his place to ask, but he couldn't help his own curiosity. Her gaze landed on his, sharpening.
"Go to hell," she said.
She stalked past, bumping him slightly in the shoulder. He watched her stride over to help her seamen, who were digging a shallow grave for several of those they'd lost in the battle. Gray longed to help, but felt like an outsider now. And when he turned back to Rhea, he found her watching him, her eyes keen and knowing. All he wanted to do was fall into her arms.
"She is my family now."
Falcon.
"Sonika,"
Falcon said, his voice croaky and weak. He looked across the portion of the battlefield where the fighting had been the most intense. Like him, Sonika was pinned to the ground. Unlike him, she wasn't moving.
"Ruahi, give me strength,"
he prayed, digging his fingers into the ground and dragging him out from beneath the massive barbarian that had died atop him. His legs screamed in pain. He was fairly certain it was broken. But he gritted his teeth and soldiered on inch by agonizing inch, tumbling over the dead, blood smearing from the ground onto his leather armor. He'd been mostly healed by the brilliant light that had coursed across the sky, Roan's final gift, he knew. But the damage to his leg was so severe it would require time and rest. Falcon jolted when he reached Sonika, because her eyes were open and staring up at the sky.
"No, please, gods, no!"
She blinked, and his heart almost stopped.
"It's so beautiful," she murmured.
Falcon released a breathy laugh.
"What is?"
"The sky. Have you ever looked at it?"
"Of course."
Falcon slumped to the ground,
rolling over onto his back to stare skyward.
No. I mean, really looked. Shanti used to do it all the time. I always gave her a hard time about it. I was too busy worrying about what was happening on the ground to consider the heavens. She was a dreamer.
Falcon saw what she meant. The sky was beautiful, though the preternatural light had faded, giving way to a darker firmament. The stars were now visible again, thousands of glittering beads. At the sky's apex, the two moons were a breath away. They wouldn't kiss on this night, but they would soon.
"You've known Shanti much longer than I have," Falcon said, watching the moons, wishing they could reach out and touch each other. "Is she going to be all right?"
I don't know.
"Thank you for being honest. People tend to lie in situations like this.
I've faced too much in my life to seek comfort in lies."
One of Sonika's hands stretched skyward, and she pretended to pluck a star from the heavens, inspecting it. Both her hand and arm were sheathed in blood.
"Are you badly injured?"
"I was. Roan healed me, like he healed everyone else. I'm mostly just sore now."
"My leg is broken, but it was crushed before. Now it's not so bad."
"Bloody fate marked," Sonika said, shaking her head. "Think they can fix everything."
Falcon snorted.
"Aye. Jai was such a damn do-gooder."
"We could use more like him," Sonika said. "More like you, too."
Warmth filled Falcon's chest.
"Thank you for saying that and for saving my life. I know we haven't always seen eye to eye."
It was Sonika's turn to chuckle.
"That's a nice way of putting it. I've despised your family my entire life, what the Hosers stood for, the oppression of the Terrans. I used to daydream about killing you and your brothers with my bare hands."
"And now?"
"Not as often."
Sonika offered a wry smile.
"Good to know."
"You aren't like them, Falcon," she said,
her voice growing serious again.
"You can rule the Empire the way it's meant to be ruled."
Falcon knew she was right. He could, but he wouldn't. It wasn't what he wanted, and between Jai, Shanti, and Sonika, he was convinced Fanes needed to take another path forward.
"No," he said. "It's time for things to change."
The moons passed in the night, watching each other with longing. Gareth. Roan was tall and strong, but between Gareth and Gwen, carrying him should have been easy. It wasn't. It was the hardest thing Gareth had ever had to do. Each step forward was a mile. Each obstacle in their path was a mountain. He felt the stairs on him like a thousand arrows. He saw the living, so many who wouldn't have survived if not for Roan's final act, his great sacrifice.
"He knew he was going to do this from the beginning," Gareth thought.
"He knew, and he told no one, carrying this burden all on his own. That, more than a sword or shield might have, made him the most courageous warrior Gareth had ever known."
"Where are we going?"
Gwen whispered.
"To the end," Gareth said.
"Roan deserves to be there at the end.
Forever."
Gwen nodded, understanding. Ahead of them, soldiers of various races and lineages cleared a path, dragging bodies, barbarians and human and Orion, off to each side. Then they filed in behind them, forming a procession. When they finally reached the place where Bane had killed the Horde leader, they laid Roan's body on the ground. Bane stood nearby, watching. From one of the pockets of his cloak he extracted something shiny. A coin. He approached, extending his hand. The golden coin caught a ray of moonlight and shimmered. Bane flipped it over where the opposite side was dark.
"Roan taught me so much," he said. "About myself. About the world."
Gareth nodded.
"I think he would say the same about you."
"I..."
Bane shook his head.
"Maybe. I don't know. The thing is, I don't know how to go on without him."
"Are you done killing rulers?"
Bane nodded, and Gareth could see a change in the boy. He looked younger, more innocent. There was a lightness in him that had never been there before.
The prophecy is fulfilled. I have no purpose.
Wrong, Gareth said. Your purpose is just beginning. All of ours is. Rhone would want us to carry on, keep the peace, forge alliances once believed to be broken forever.
Bane said, Thank you.
He reached forward and rested the coin on Rhone's chest, right above where his life mark lay hidden beneath his shirt.
No, Gareth said, forcing a smile to his lips. Thank you for not killing me when you had the chance.
Bane stepped back, fell to the earth, and began to dig with his hands. Soon he was joined by others, the first of which was Ennis Lorraine, his hair dangling over his eyes as he worked. Gwen's eyes met Gareth's.
Ennis, she said.
The man didn't react, clawing at the dirt, scraping away layer after layer.
Ennis Lorraine,
she said more loudly. This time Gareth saw him flinch, though he didn't stop digging.
Look at me,
Gwen snapped. Finally he stopped, using dirt-stained fingers to comb the hair away from his face. His eyes roamed up until they locked on Gwen.
This all might have gone differently if not for you.
I was weak. Broken.
His voice was a rasp.
At first, perhaps, Gwen said, but not in the end. In the end, you conquered.
His lips tightened, trembling slightly. But then he relaxed and he nodded, before going back to digging. Gwen and Gareth didn't dig, holding hands across the man they had both loved to his final breath. They didn't say anything more, because they didn't need to. Their tears said it all, falling like rain. When the others had finished their task, they lifted Rhone once more, careful not to disturb the coin on his chest, lowering him slowly into the pit. They stood beside each other, each clasping a handful of dirt.
I don't think I can do it,
Gareth said. The thought of watching Rhone disappear made his stomach heave.
We'll do it together,
Gwen said. So they did, releasing the dirt at the same moment. They stepped back and allowed others to come forward, men and women, Orians and humans. Two of the wood nymphs even stepped up, though they were missing their other sister, killed during the battle. Instead of dirt, they dropped three green leaves attached to a single stem, the life mark symbol. Gareth nodded to them, and they nodded back. Those who had fought further to the south arrived, Lisbeth Lorne and Sir Dietrich and Grey Aris, and then Rhea, holding Nura. Tears streaked down her cheeks as she added her own handful of dirt.
I wish I could have gotten to know you better,
was all she said, sobbing as she turned away. When the grave was completely filled in, Gwen glanced at Gareth.
You say something, she said.
Me? Why not?
Gareth was no orator, but he knew Rhone. Wherever he was, he deserved words spoken for him.
Rhone was everything to me, he said. From there the words flowed like mead at a Ferian celebration.
They were full of laughter and sorrow, a myriad of emotions that left none untouched. But most of all, they were full of life, as Rhone would have wanted.
105. The Southern Empire, Fainir. Falkenhosa. 1 week later.
Falkenhosa could scarcely believe it was over. From time to time he pinched himself to make certain it was real, and not one of his dreams born from the fiction he usually escaped into. During the battle, his armies, both the Phoenicians and Terrans, had been decimated, but some had survived because of the life mark's final sacrifice. His own injuries had been mostly healed, too, though he was left with several nasty scars to remind him of a day he would never forget. His leg was on the mend, but he could still get around on crutches. But that was all in the past now, and he had another challenge. Shanti Parthena Lord. The strongest woman he had ever known, the only woman he had ever loved, needed him, and he would not turn his back on her even if she could never share the same level of affection with him. The first step would be getting her through the tribunal. He took a deep breath, marched into the dimly lit corridor, and unlocked the cell. She was curled in a ball in the corner,